Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call hosted by Stuart Kistrup. My name is Shelley, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would like to advise all parties the conference is being recorded for replay purposes. And now I'd like to hand the call over to Stuart. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Wessex. My name's, well, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Stuart Kistrup. I'm the Director of Route Asset Management, so I lead the RAM team, who are responsible for the long-term asset management strategies, effectively. I wanted to do two things with this safety hour conversation. First, I just wanted to do a quick review of incidents that happened in this week. And throw it open to anybody out there if there are any particular incidents people would like to raise for wider discussion or any conversations and questions. And then I wanted to have a bit of a conversation about safety from my perspective, and to desperately try not to talk about slips, trips and falls and other things like that, but to talk about things from the perspective of the RAM team and broader assets. So kicking off first with incidents this week, we raised 100 close calls, which is a positive thing, and there were four issues, incidents raised during the week, no injuries, which is a good thing. One theme coming out from a couple of the incidents was about the quality of communications, particularly between ECROs and signalers and people operating front foots. I guess the takeaway from that is really the importance of good quality communication and making sure people talk. However, I couldn't really have this conversation without referring to the events of Thursday last week, when clearly there was a very major fire at Vauxhall. I thought it just worthwhile to, clearly it's the subject of a formal investigation at the moment, I don't want to prejudice that, but just set out the key points of what happened, and then throw it open for a little bit of a conversation, see whether anybody out there has any different perspectives or questions that they want to ask. So as most people will be aware, a major fire happened on Vauxhall Station at Platform 3. Various cables feeding traction and signalling equipment was set fire to underneath the platform. The cause is likely to have been a spark from a grinder setting fire to some kind of ignition source underneath the country end of Platform 3. This was, of course, underneath a wooden platform with bridge decking and tarmac on top, which caught fire. This started in the early hours of the morning and took several hours for the fire brigade to put out. Probably worth commenting at the time that grinders sparking fires aren't an unknown risk on the network, and lots of effort put into mitigating that in terms of spraying fore and aft, identifying potential risks, and having a spotter to spot potential issues. So the driver spotted that there was a fire underneath the platform, and the crew actually discharged 7,000 litres of water pretty quickly onto it to try and put it out. That wasn't enough, so clearly a very significant fire. I mean, the takeaways from my perspective is, and for all those who are involved, I really think recovery was outstanding, and huge praise should go to everyone involved for getting it safely and quickly back to running so quickly. And we were able to run a full service from 8 o'clock that evening. Clearly, disappointing we found ourselves in that position, and potential huge safety risk, because if the fire had spread, that could have been even more significant, but a really positive outcome in terms of responding so safely to it. I want to just throw it open for a couple of minutes in terms of whether anybody on the line has any perspectives or questions they'd like to ask. So could we hand over to Shelley for any questions?
Thank you, Stuart. Ladies and gentlemen, for any questions or comments, please key star then one on your telephone. Record your name and press the hash key. If you need then to withdraw your question, it's star and two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So that's star, then one on your telephone for any comments or questions. Thank you. There are none coming through just at the moment.
Okay, well, I suggest we press on. If anybody does have any questions or issues that they'd like to pick up, then please feel free to cut through to Shelley, and I'm quite happy to interrupt some conversation. The challenge with these conversations is talking into the ether. I don't know who's on the end of the line or how many people are out there, or indeed particular points that we might talk about. So for me, it's an opportunity to talk about safety from my perspective as DRAM. And there were two things I wanted to cover off. One's much more substantial around the nature of our infrastructure and how we live with it and make decisions about it, and I'll come to that second. But first, I just wanted to share a little vignette that really struck a chord with me. Whether it will have any resonance for others, I don't know, but I thought worth sharing in this context. I said at the beginning I didn't want to talk about slip, trips and falls, and this kind of touches slightly on it, but I think the point is broader than that. And that's around what we mean by safety. We spend a lot of time talking about safety, and we can get very analytical in terms of looking at, you know, what are the causes, and are we tracking close calls, and we just understand incidents, and, you know, we put action plans and things in that. But actually, safety is much bigger than that, isn't it? It's about how do we approach life, and do we think about it all the time? Are we thinking about the consequences of our actions, and looking out for our friends and colleagues out there as well. And from my perspective, trying to step away from just thinking about safety in the context of the day-to-day working environment we live in, and what can we learn from other organisations and how they deal with things. And a couple of weeks ago, I visited Drax Power Station, which for those who don't know is a large coal-fired power station up near Lincoln and Sheffield, and it is gradually being converted from coal-fired to wood chip-fired, effectively in a renewable sense. So, interesting things there in terms of process and how they manage safety. But what I was much more struck by was just their ongoing focus in terms of trying to sort of think about safety in a broader context. And there's one thing that their ops director said to me that really struck a chord, which I'll share with you in a minute. And I think the key takeaway for me from that visit was here was a large site. I couldn't get the scale of it, but eight big burners, really risky stuff, high-pressured steam, all sorts of things that could go wrong. And yet their safety record was an order of magnitude better than that which we achieve on the railway. Very difficult to put your finger in terms of why should that be? And you could get quite defensive and say, well, it's easy. You put a fence around it so you can control who comes on site and all sorts of things like that. But something was fundamentally different, and I expected when I'd go walking around this, I'd see that it was all spick and span, and everything would be neatly tidied up, and all those sort of things. But actually, that wasn't the case, you know. And there was dust, and there was soot, and it was clearly a heavy industrial place that was burning things with lots of high risk and the like. But we had a conversation with the ops director in terms of what were the challenges, very easy to get defensive, but the one thing that he said that I just wanted to share with others that really struck to me was sort of in conversation about, you know, the real challenge we face with our safety is people stumbling and the injuries and the like that come from that. And it's very difficult to address that. But what he was very good at, and which I aspire to and will continue to keep doing, is trying to sort of think about safety in a broader context. Because, of course, lots of people do different things in their personal lives where they do different things. So there are hundreds of people who go walking in the mountains in their spare time, and they go walking up things like Striding Edge on Helvellyn, which is very narrow, very uneven. And yet people don't fall off that. And so the only reason for rambling for an anecdote like that is just to sort of lodge that thought in people's mind that why is it that that's the case, and do we do things differently in that sense? And I suppose an open challenge to everybody on the call very easy to have a conversation about safety in the rail environment, but are we actually thinking about safety in the broader context, and what can we learn from other people doing other things, and whether there are good ideas which we could share? So I'll just leave it at that as an anecdote to share, and move on to what I really wanted to talk about in a broader context, which is about our infrastructure as a whole, and how we relate with it, and what the nature of that design is. Now clearly the RAM team are deeply involved in specification of replacement and enhancement and what that should look like. And we used the safety workshop a couple of terms ago to start to have a conversation about what a safe asset might look like. And I just wanted to link that through to something called the Construction Design and Management Regulations, which people may or may not have heard about, being something of a thorny subject in Network Rail over the past, recently updated in 2015, and therefore the subject of ongoing conversations. But important, because it's a bit of law that applies to the whole construction process from concept to completion, and essentially what it does is set out what people must do to comply, comply with, to ensure that large scale projects are carried out safely. Now, clearly that applies to the RAM team and the big renewals works which are specified through IP, and indeed the enhancements works we do around Wessex capacity and the like. But it's also relevant to the wider route, which is why I wanted to have a bit of a conversation or discussion about it in two specific contexts. One I've just alluded to in terms of safe by design, in that it stipulates that when construction works are carried out, they should both be designed such that they can be implemented safely by the people that are doing them, but the legacy that is left behind should be safely maintainable and fit for purpose. And we had a conversation through the safety workshops where I and members of my team ran a number of workshops in the safety workshops to have a conversation about what we thought a safe asset should look like. And that was done very consciously, because what I wanted to establish within the room was a view of what it should be, so that if for reasons we had to vary away from what the absolute gold standard might look like, we could do that in a really structured and considered way, so that people more broadly across the group would know that one of the RAMs had been involved in a structured and considered process of saying, well, that is what we would aspire to be doing given infinite capability and infinite resources, but we need to make some trade-offs, and I'm happy that in doing that we've gone through a structured process that any risks are safely mitigated, such that when people look at things, oh, well, that's, you know, well, ideally we should have done that, they can either be confident that somebody who is clearly identifiable within the RAM team has gone through a process and there would have been good reason for not doing it, or actually they can pick the phone up and ask them and have a conversation about that so that we can learn from it. So we ran a load of workshops, which was a really engaging and interesting conversation. And if I was to summarise, the key thing that I think I took away from listening to those workshops was that the single most important thing to most people out on the ground is that we have a safe and well-maintained access point, which is clearly lit, in good condition, provides good, safe parking such that assets are securely parked there, and that the steps are wide enough such that we can get down to a clear and safe access route that's fit for purpose. And that was received loud and clear, and we'll build into the safe asset vision. But there's also a conversation around how do we design our assets and how they fit together, such that we've really thought about them from a maintainer's point of view, that they're as safe as can be within limits to manage things. So there are some things that the RAMs will know about and are self-evident and will build into plans. So gapping the conrail around points motors, we should make sure that there's some space that whenever people are using spanners on points motors, they don't need to worry about them touching the conrail. And that is now built into our S&C strategy, so whenever we do an S&C renewal, we'll make sure that that is the case. Similarly, we should look to put location cases at access points, because if we put them at access points, then people don't need to access the railway to get to them. And as we work through our Felton resignaling scheme, that is absolutely the plan, that with a new technology that allows longer cable runs, we'll be able to put almost all, if not all, of the location cases at access points rather than trackside. But then we need to provide safe walking routes such that people can get to the track more safely, and indeed we should really seek to locate things at least 3 metres from the running well wherever possible. Against that, there's a whole load of constraints, clearly, in terms of whether we have the land and should we acquire the land, and where there are the safe accesses, what is the cost of putting them back. So those points have been taken on board and built into a safe asset vision, which is now being enacted through our CP6 plan to make provisions to take those things on board. But I wanted to push a challenge back out to people on the phone in terms of how often do you look at something that you're working on or ask and think, why on earth was it designed like that? If only we'd done that, or if people knew about that, we could do that and it would make things so much easier. And my special challenge, either for discussion now or at any point in the future, is do we then come back and engage in a conversation? Because clearly many of the RAMs have been maintenance engineers and are now sitting in the RAM team, and they get out and talk to people, and they should absorb those sort of things, and they should have views of some of the things they should be taking account of from a client perspective. But does that get fed back such that we can have a conversation about it, or where we see things, do people challenge back and assure themselves that, yes, that point's understood, but there are very good reasons why it doesn't happen. So that's kind of a challenge out there to people on the phones. And if we just take a minute or two, and I'll pass back to Shelley, whether anybody's got any sort of burning issues or points they'd like to talk about in that space, or things that they think really should be taken account of that aren't in terms of the designer, how our assets are built.
Just to remind you all, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please key star then one on your telephone keypad. Record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. There are no questions currently in the queue, Stuart, but I will let you know if we get some come through.
Okay, let's just hang on for a minute.
We do have one question that's just come through. Unfortunately, there is no name recorded. So if you have queue to ask a question, you are now live in the call. Please go ahead.
Hello.
And to make sure your line is not on mute, if you've queued to ask a question, please.
Sorry, it was on mute. my name's Chris Brown from Haven't S&T.
Hi, Chris.
One of our bugbears that has been over the years is with manufacturers of level crossing pedestals.
Yeah.
We have asked for considerations through Unipart because to get the hydraulic power pack into the pedestal to renew it, you actually have to manually lift it up over the lip rather than them construct a door where the whole bottom of the pedestal becomes accessible.
Yes.
So that is one of our sort of bugbears, is that obviously going back to the manufacturer, they design it, it's brilliant, they put it in, they bolt the whole thing down, but when it comes back to maintaining it or changing components of it, it is then working in a confined space. It may be a two-person lift, but you can't get two people around it. So
I think that's an absolutely brilliant example, and exactly the sort of thing I was fishing for by throwing it open. That we need to be demanding and challenging of people to take that on board. Now clearly I can't wave a magic wand necessarily and make Unipart fit everything we've got on the network, but that's exactly the sort of conversation we should be having in terms of, is there a quick modification which we could do which would mitigate that risk? But moving forwards, feeding that into our expectations of new location cases that they can be taken on board. So I will definitely take that away and push it with Ronnie and the team. In terms of, you've been engaging direct with Unipart, have you, or have you been feeding up through Roland and Ronnie?
No, I haven't done it by them. This was, must have been about 10 years ago, I should think. And it was put to Unipart, it was put to manufacturers, it just never went anywhere. So hopefully now that you've got like a RAM team that they can pursue something like this.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly what, I mean, at the very least, Chris, I mean, I'm being very careful as I frame this. It would be really easy to open Pandora's box and say, you know, we need to do this, and clearly there's only so much money available in terms of funding from the government. We need to get the balance around that right. But what I'm very definitely trying to do is shift the focus that we don't just do things for cheap installation, because, you know, I'm accountable ultimately as a client, that we're taking on board how we're going to think about this such that we can maintain it. So we've found some examples where we've had to do things differently with substations so that it's safer for people that don't have to crawl underneath them. And this is exactly the sort of thing. So what I will do is pick it up and we'll take it back with Ronnie and we'll see whether there's a modification we could do that would help do that. But at the very least, I think you're owed some feedback to explain why it can't be done, and we agree that that's the right balance in terms of low as reasonably practical in terms of mitigating it. But the real thing I want to achieve is that we've got that ongoing dialogue so that people are aware of it, and we don't make the same mistakes as we do the next level crossing installation. And, you know, has that been fed into the design of MCBOD equipment as it goes in that we're thinking about it? And are we being demanding as a client who ends up owning this infrastructure and having to operate it safely, or are we just accepting things that we shouldn't do? I think it's a great example, and I will act on it as I walk out of this phone call, and at the very least we'll get some feedback. But if I could encourage you and your peers to continue to think about these things, and don't just sit on it and be frustrated. I really want you to pick up the phone and talk to the RAM team such that we're thinking about it and taking on board. I expect them to come back and say, well, we can't do that, or explain the challenges so there's a two-way dialogue. And if you're not getting that, then pick the phone up or drop me an email. I'm Stuart.Kistruck, K-I-S-Truck. Only one of those in that way, so you should be able to find me easily enough. And I'm completely open to an ongoing conversation about it.
Okay.
There are no more questions in the queue. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on. And the second bit around the construction design management regs that I just wanted to touch on is really easy to view those in terms of, oh, that's about big construction projects and building factories or large scale renewals. But quite important to me that people recognise more broadly across the route that actually some of the stuff we do as maintenance and call it a maintenance activity, you kind of stopped and looked at it in the cold hard light of day, or if you were a lawyer sort of picking through sort of definitions of legislation. Some of the stuff we do at the heavy end of maintenance is probably beyond what you would sort of term sort of maintenance in terms of topping up oil or polishing things or checking readings on things, and is moving into full-scale construction projects, which means that the requirements of the regulations apply. Now, we've gone through a process nationally across the network in terms of interpreting those rules in terms of what that means from a maintenance perspective, and there is a set of procedures which we've agreed and shared with the IMEs in terms of how we're going to discharge that on Wessex. But actually, I didn't want to talk in terms of details. I just wanted to talk about the principles behind it, because actually if you distill it right back to principles, the principles apply to anything we do, and therefore doesn't really change what we do, and quite a handy sort of structure for thinking about it. So there's about 6 points I was going to pick up. The first is that where you've got lots of people or different contractors operating on the same project or working together, there should be a leading mind or a principal contractor. So there's somebody who understands how it all fits together and can understand the interrelations between different people rather than having lots of different people thinking they're in charge. We'll talk about it. Fairly common sense, sensible thing. The next point is to have the right people with the skills and competences to do what is required of the work. Again, not an unsurprising thing to make a statement about. Thirdly, that there is adequate time and resources to do the job, and that there aren't therefore pressures being put on to do things in an unsafe manner to live within it, and that's a duty that falls to the client specifying that the work that they are making adequate resources and time available for people to do the job. Fourthly, and I guess this one is probably interesting in a maintenance space, and we might need to continue to think about it, but that there are adequate welfare facilities or that they're appropriate for the level of work that's been doing. I know that Dave Smith in the works delivery space has been working hard to improve the provision of that, and we need to continue to push on that. And then fifthly, that we've got a plan in terms of how we're going to do the work such that we can demonstrate that health and safety risks are adequately managed. So that's my distillation of the CDM regs 2015 into five key points in terms of what it means. And the reason for expressly doing that is just to sort of drive a conversation that, from my perspective, I don't think anything there is different to what we would aspire to do in terms of thinking about and delivering things in a common and sensible way. The procedures as we've established them within the route means that most maintenance tasks that are covered by a standard task risk assessment sheet, we carry on doing it, and it doesn't change the nature of what we do. The challenge to people is when we think we're doing something unique and novel, to just pause and think, you know, have we thought about those points I set out there, and are we doing it appropriately? And the area that we need to maintain a continuing discussion is between maintenance engineers and works delivery in terms of, is that sufficiently different and novel or large scale that we might want to do that under a works delivery umbrella, because they have a principal contractor's license and clear arrangements that set out how they discharge many of those things, or are we comfortable doing it in a maintenance umbrella? But in doing that, would we be comfortable that we could demonstrate that we've got a clear plan about how we're going to manage our health and safety risks, and we are comfortable that we've got the time and resources to do the job, and we've got the appropriate people with the skills to make those judgments? Don't really want to say any more about that other than just sort of raise it in people's consciousness. And if you take a message away from the conversation, it's about thinking about doing things in a logical way with the right people, the right time and resources, and a sensible plan. And I'm quite sure you do that every day in your day-to-day work. So if you hear people talking about CDM, that's the key point. We come back to it. Again, have I thrown to any questions that people might have about that?
Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it's star then one on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key for any comments or questions. And there are no questions coming through.
Okay.
Just bear with me, please, Stuart. Would you just have one question for you?
Okay.
And that comes from the line of...
Stuart, can you hear me?
I can now. Yes, who's that?
Teresa Capstick. I'm sat in a conference with a whole load of the safety team from the route.
Yep.
Can I just say, I thought that was really, really good. Because it's awful doing one of those things. If you don't get any feedback, you wonder, A, if you're talking to anybody, and B, if you made any sense.
I quite often talk to myself, Tracy, so that's fine.
Yeah. So, thank you. That was really, really eloquent and good, and you made some cracking points in there about design and CDM made easy, which I thought was brilliant. So, I've just phoned to say thank you, really, mate.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you, Tracy. If there are no sort of direct questions about CDM or indeed anything I've talked about on the call, I genuinely mean that please don't hesitate to email me or indeed pick up the phone and ask any questions so that we can talk it through from there.
There are no more questions.
Okay, well, unless somebody wants to raise any close calls that they've been thinking about this week or any key points that come out, I would propose to draw a line under this conversation at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stuart. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining and enjoy the rest of your day.